Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
105.3 FM HD2. This is Tom Fitzmaurice with the second course of The Food Show. It's one we've been working on for coming up on 40 years. And here we are, and love to have you join us. It's very simple. You like to eat? Come on over here. Eat with me. We also talk about drinks and wine and cocktails and everything else. And climbing upon me right now is Satsuma. Wait a minute. No, that's not Satsuma. That's Valencia. Valencia, my cat. My cat, Valencia, somehow or another got in our studio here. Uh-huh. And but it's perfect that he should be.
I bet you he landed on his tail.
Probably so, yeah.
I'm sorry, buddy.
He's pretty tough. He stands up for it. Anyway, he is Valencia, so it's a strange
okay
moment that we should have him come in.
Been a busy break time. Have to
yeah,
say.
Well, you know, breaks and breaks, and you know, sometimes you have
time
to use the clutch too. Okay. Yeah.
All right. So where were we?
I don't know. It was a lot of fun though, wherever it was.
I'm guessing nowhere.
No.
Yeah. Usually. Yeah.
Well, we can try anything.
All right. So let's see. We did the chili powder.
Chili powder. What you got on that?
Chili powder is your edible dictionary.
Oh?
Yeah. What is the difference in chili powder and, say, paprika or harissa?
You can stop right there. Just grind it all up into a very fine, puffy kind of quality, and
it's
that's
chili
it.
Chili peppers.
Chili peppers.
But that's the same sort of thing as paprika, right?
Yeah, except it's a different spice, a different kind directly. Paprika, or paprika as you wish, it is one kind of pepper that is reduced down or ground down at about, well, two different degrees of fineness.
Yeah.
And that's it.
It says it's almost identical to paprika.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Except it's how did you grow?
It's ground dried chili peppers.
Yeah.
Usually on the mild side, but sometimes
yep
noticeably hot.
Yes.
There is no standard for the flavor.
No.
Ingredients other than chili figure into some chili powder blends, although those made with pure capsicum annuum peppers are the most common.
Mm-hmm.
In some chili powders, the methods of drying the peppers give a dark brown color and a smoky flavor. Some use a good deal of cayenne pepper in the mix. These can be very hot indeed. Chili powder is almost identical to paprika, including the wide range of possible flavors. Taste chili powder before you use it. You love chili powder, don't you?
I do, yeah. There are certain things that goes well, very well with, and paprika, which doesn't have much of a reputation because it, in most cases, is pretty bland. But lately, that's not been the case. I've been knowing it getting spicier and spicier and spicier.
Is that one of those things like cinnamon?
Yeah.
Or saffron, which is a spice that we have in America,
yeah,
which if you got it where it grew or was processed, you would notice a completely different thing, because the one that we have, the version that we have, like cinnamon, the cinnamon that we have is not supposed to be real cinnamon, is it? It's supposed to be like some kind of...
Oh, well, yeah, that's true of a lot of things.
That's what I'm saying. And one is saffron. There's fake saffron and real saffron. There's fake cinnamon and real cinnamon.
That's right.
Is there fake paprika and real paprika?
Oh, yeah, yeah. There's you can get a paprika that is completely bland. And you can also get one that's quite spicy. But the interesting thing is that both of them are bell peppers. They are made from bell peppers, and they are exactly the same, except...
The bell peppers are different, though, because the ones where you... paprika is Hungarian, and the peppers there are a much longer and different look red pepper than the ones you see on the shelves at Rouse's.
Well, you can hold to that, and you might even be able to get away with putting it across as correct. But in my experience, it's you wind up using a lot more of it, and you grind it down more, and it winds up being a spicier, hotter pepper. But, you know, this is something you can play with as you're cooking.
So
it's not a big,
So if you were to taste chili powder on your finger and paprika right next to each other, would there be a noticeable taste?
Probably so. It wouldn't be a much of one.
I might want to try it. I might try it at the next break. Go get those two things and bring them in here to try them.
No sense in just letting it sit there.
I don't know. I think that you like... chili, what's the chili sauce that you use instead of like you use chili sauce like a lot of people use ketchup? You don't like ketchup at all, but chili sauce you like. Now, what's the difference and why do you make that distinction?
The funny thing is that the one that's chili sauce says that it does look a lot like ketchup, by the way.
It doesn't taste like ketchup, though.
No.
Because ketchup is sweet.
Yeah. Well, this is even sweeter.
Chili sauce?
Yeah.
No.
Whenever I've read the label, it winds out that it's a bigger ingredient.
No.
Okay. I will accept that.
I guess while I'm in the kitchen, I'll go get some chili sauce and some ketchup, too, because that's definitely not the case. 260-6368 is the number. You're listening to WWL 105.3 FM HD2. We are talking about food. And rather...
keep going. I'll just
banally.
Keep...
banally. How's the word? How's that
banally?
Word? No, banally.
Banally. So it's banal?
Yeah.
Okay.
Banally.
That which is banalist.
Yes. I have to say that's...
going
that's,
over the
that's
edge.
What I would say about the show so far today. Help us out, folks.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've been pleased with the outcome so far.
You
we're
have?
Just rolling right along.
Yeah. Didn't even do much eating this weekend. We just did those two meals. Yeah, I'm pretty well sticking to my adamant I'm not eating out as much.
Oh, well.
Because
congratulations.
I don't want to. Anyway, but
are you trying to lose some weight or something?
I'm trying to just...
how much do you weigh?
I'm trying to do a flush. A flush.
A flush?
Yes. Where you flush out all of your toxins.
Oh.
I don't usually eat too many toxins. So.
I don't have that problem.
Yeah, you don't really eat anything, Tom. Tom's been having a massive breakfast, though. So you...
do you know the story behind the morning breakfast every day?
When I see Mary Lee in the kitchen making you a breakfast, I am impressed at how impressive it is. I mean, she cuts tomatoes, she cuts spinach, cheese, ham, and it's all laid out on this long cutting board, and it's beautiful. And then she whips up three eggs for you and lays it all very carefully in the pan. And those are beautiful omelets. Those are way better than the ones I used to just dump in.
Mm-hmm. And it's really great to have your daughter coming in there and doing things like that.
Yes, it is. Well,
and with care, and look forward to it every day.
Well, she's good.
She is good.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Yes, she is. She is. But the omelets that I used to make for you were, I'm just not that meticulous as she is. No, I'm not nearly as meticulous as she is. I was just getting it done. You know, but I'm really impressed, Tom, that you're eating 3-egg omelets, because I used to try to force you to eat even 2-egg omelets. So now that you're eating these massive omelets, maybe you'll gain some weight.
Everybody keeps telling me, hey, what's with you losing all that weight? I haven't lost any weight. I've lost 80 pounds is all.
Yes, is all. Yeah. I was telling her this morning as she was trying to decide how much of a knob of butter to put in the pan that she...
Here's that knob of butter again.
That she shouldn't really concern herself with that too much, because it's wonderful to cook for someone that you don't have to worry about them eating all that stuff. Just throw it in the pan. You need the calories. Back to what Ron was saying about deglazing the pan. That's another thing that I do without any sort of rhyme or reason. If the pan is on hot, as it always is, it's always on 10 when I cook. So that means that whatever it is going to develop a crust. And the crust and the pan needs to be cleaned. So I will always automatically deglaze a pan. But he was talking about the things that you deglaze a pan with. And I have been keeping on the counter a... I'm kind of ashamed to say this. We had these New Orleans Connection people who have a winery in California, and it's called Flambeau Winery, and they're delightful people. And they brought us a couple of their very classy-looking wines and delicious wines. You could tell by looking at the bottles that these wines were a cut above. And so... the wine itself is actually excellent. So,
to be actually excellent is really something.
Coming from me, especially. So, because I'm not much of a wine or any kind of drinker. So,
no.
So I didn't want to throw this. We had the tasting in the studio, and I just didn't want to throw this wine away because it was that good. So I kept it, and that is our official deglazing the pan liquid. The Flambeau red wine from Napa.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can't get too many.
And I think that you don't really need to go through all that trouble to deglaze a pan. I think if you just pour the wine in it and just simmer it at low, the particles that you're trying to get off the bottom of the pan will automatically lift off with the moisture from whatever the deglazing liquid is.
I'm trying to keep them from burning. That's the big issue.
Well, if you turn it down to like a simmer, then it's not going to burn. And once you put the liquid in, it doesn't burn anyway.
So. If you're lucky and if you're careful.
Right. Well, if I'm not burning it, nobody's burning it because that's just the way I cook. But I do always like to deglaze things, and I've become really, really interested in using wine for cooking in ways that I previously have not bothered with. And I think that his method of deglazing a pan is very complicated, and it sounds really delicious.
Yeah, and it works for
me.
You
know, it just goes to show you, this woman that we had on the other day, she wrote this book. It's a beautiful book, and it is obviously complicated, but not meant to look complicated. And the book has a lot of what are you looking at, Tom?
The cat has returned.
Yeah, well, you're looking at him like there's something weird, and I was thinking I broke his tail or something.
Well, I was looking to see.
Anyway,
I can't tell.
She inspired me to be a little more complicated in my cooking, and I sort of have been leaning in that direction anyway. By deglazing pans instead of my usual way with water with a wine or some other deglazing liquid. So now currently we have like 2 bottles of wine, just sitting on the counter as official deglazing the pan liquids. And I think that's definitely something to do. And I usually, if I don't bother to deglaze a pan, I will still deglaze a pan by putting water in it and letting it loosen up before I even try to clean it. But why clean it and pour it all down the sink when you could take whatever it is that's on the bottom of the pan and then put it into what you're eating? A much better thing. 260-6368 is the number. You're listening to WWL 105.3 FM HD2.
Hi there. Welcome back. You have managed to stumble onto the food show. I'm Tom Fitzmaurice. That's all I ever do. My whole life, all I do is talk about food and restaurants and cooking and wine and all that. And I do feel proud of it. But I would like to share it with you and you with me, and I'm just waiting for you to give us a call. Our number is 260-6368. 260-6368. Sit down or call me up or talk to me, and we'll talk to you as long as you want about anything you want to know about food, about restaurants, cooking, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So let's keep on moving here. I do believe that we have Greg around here somewhere. Greg, you here?
I'm here.
Greg? Well, here we are.
I'm here.
You may roll.
Thank you. How is everybody doing?
Everybody appears to be doing very well. However, we've had a couple of people on the staff of Rooney who are concerned about, although I don't think they have.
You have in mind, Greg?
Hey, Marianne. I brought up last week, we talked about Cuco's, remember?
Yes.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Did we figure anything out other?
Well, they did. So they had multiple locations, you're correct, in New Orleans, but they did go out of state. I remember seeing one in Hattiesburg, Mississippi.
Okay.
And
yeah,
so,
I remember another one being way down on the bayou, now that you mentioned that one.
I think Morgan City, maybe, or like towards Houma, maybe.
I think you're right.
There
yeah.
were a lot of them, which is why I was surprised that they dwindled down to nothing. Now, it was the Liuza yeah. family.
Right,
and
right.
I think that they just sold all of their restaurant holdings and went into real estate on the North Shore.
Yeah. Well, smart move, I guess. But they, you talk about, I mean, in retrospect, I mean, nowadays, that would be, anytime you have over 10 restaurants, that's, to me, that's
yeah.
very, you know, that's a mini chain. I mean, that's really good.
Yep.
So,
it's not a mini chain. It's a chain. Yeah.
Well, it's a chain. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Absolutely.
No,
well,
it's,
that's all.
It was good,
that's
too. That's the sad part.
Yeah, no, it was really good. And now, before I let you guys go, you'd mentioned Chi-Chi's. And
yes.
they still, if you go to Winn-Dixie or Rouse's or anywhere, they still sell their pre-made margarita mix and, you know, like their salsa and stuff like that from the restaurant. And it
oh,
says
they
the
do.
Name on there, Chi-Chi's. Yeah.
That's another one that had gobs and gobs of locations and then all of a sudden
yeah,
gone
it's a big deal
day.
For a while.
yeah. Yep. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all I have for today. Thanks,
I don't
guys.
Know if it's mismanagement or if it's a conscious decision to just, you know, stop or what, but that happens,
well,
I think, more often. What?
And you know what, Marianne, too, that you're right. I think mismanagement has a big part, and also lease operations with real estate. Look at
yes.
Houston's on Veterans. I mean, you couldn't find a parking spot for how many years, and they, you know, something happened with the lease. So,
yeah,
I think real estate.
Yeah,
plays
you know
a
what?
Part.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say I think real estate. You know, Tom and I spoke about this a couple years ago when they had that closure. That sometimes your lease is like, you know, I mean, when the rent goes up or whatever, or something maybe changed, some stipulations in the
yeah.
lease, and that could definitely stop a good thing.
Okay, now I am looking at Chi-Chi's.
Chi-Chi's.
Yeah,
I'm looking at
Chi-Chi's. And it's they're still around, not the restaurant. It's Mexican restaurant chain operating. Chi-Chi's is a Mexican restaurant chain operating in Belgium, Luxembourg, Austria, the UAE, and Kuwait.
Wow.
By Tumbleweed Inc.
Huh.
The chain
Tumbleweed?
Also once operated in the United States and Canada. But exited those countries in 2004. Currently, Chi-Chi's is also a brand of Mexican-themed grocery foods with an emphasis on salsa.
Yeah.
So since 1975, but they, yeah. I'm sorry, what?
No, no, I said when Dixie or Rouse's, but maybe like other stores too. If you look in this salsa aisle, you will see something from Chi-Chi's.
Well, you know, they do have Mexican restaurants, or one Mexican restaurant in the United States. It's an upscale chain, and it's called Don Pablo's. And you don't see them here. You're familiar with it? Are you familiar with it?
I am. I think they're in like Atlanta, maybe, in Georgia.
Mid-Atlantic. They're Mid-Atlantic. Don Pablo's. They have them in the D.C. area. Also, Steak and Ale.
Oh, okay.
And Red Barn, I don't know that one. Lum's looks like a cafeteria. And Sambo's, Cuckoo, and Beefsteak Charlie's. Do you remember them?
I remember that these were all chains
Beefsteak
at one
Charlie's,
level or another.
Yeah.
But that was one of them. And then there were two restaurants that originally came out on Bienville Street, Iberville Street, rather. Just off of Jefferson Davis Parkway.
Now, according to this, Chi-Chi's was bankrupt in the United States. I wonder if they're still operating over.
Maybe it's not
overseas.
The same thing at all.
That's no, it's the definitely first thing. Oh, it's definitely the logo. What?
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Bankrupt. Wow.
Yeah, these smartphones—they'll tell you everything.
Huh.
Doug, are you on this too? What did Doug dig up?
No.
Okay. All right, Greg. That means you have to go. We have another caller. Talk to you later. Thank you. All right, who's the other caller?
Mike.
Mike.
Hello.
Mike.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Oh, what a day, huh? What a day. What a day.
What a day?
What does that mean, Mike?
After what the markets did. After what the markets did today, it's going to be a triple scotch night.
I'm going to tell you what. I was talking to a doctor friend of mine today, and he said, you know, I'm really kind of disappointed in the doctor community, the medical community, for not pushing back on some of this craziness. You know,
that was only partially responsible. They got a war going on between the Saudis and the Russians as far as oil production and oil prices.
Yeah, but this was tumbling long before that happened. That happened today.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I got a couple of things. First off, you need to refrigerate your deglazing wines.
Oh, okay.
Because if you don't, what's going to happen within a matter of days, they're going to oxidize, and it's going to have a nasty taste to it.
Okay.
And
unless you like those kinds of things.
They will oxidize in the refrigerator, but you'll get a little bit more longevity out of them in the refrigerator.
Okay, thank you.
The other thing is, y'all were talking about the warehouse district and the genesis of the whole thing. And am I correct that Emeril was really one of the first people to open a restaurant in the warehouse district?
No, they beat him to it for the most part.
This was 1990. Emeril's opened in 1990, and the World's Fair was in 1984, so there was a six-year span
I'm trying to think of who may have preceded him with a major restaurant in a warehouse district, though.
It wasn't him. I don't think so, anyway.
What about Tommy?
I'm trying to think of any
Tommy's
examples of that, but I can't think up of anything. I think that just came along at that right time.
Well, it might have been one of the first ones, because, you know, to take the warehouse district from what it was to what it is now probably took a couple of years. And if the World's Fair closed in 1984, then, you know, he opened in 1990.
Yeah, I think it was 92, actually, if I'm not mistaken, but close enough. And I don't know, you know, I sometimes you don't remember things accurately, but I just thought that his taking that chance in that area of town really just kind of lit the fuse for everybody to come behind it, you know. But I could be wrong about that.
Well, it's definitely a wonderful thing what's happened to that area, that's for sure.
Yeah, the real estate values are really good. One final thing. Did I hear you all say you went to Pardo's last week?
No.
Pardo's.
We went to Forks and Corks about 2 weeks ago.
Okay, all right. Because I heard you talking about Forks and Corks, and I heard you talking about what's going on with Vasquez and how he's redoing the menus and everything. And my only, I haven't been to any of the restaurants since he's done what he's done. Okay, so I don't really have any criticism of what he's done. But just in the most general terms, I'm not particularly attracted to the idea of a guy going in and making restaurant food healthy. That's not really what I'm looking for at a restaurant.
You know? Well, you'll have to take that up with Osmond because I don't know. I don't think that food deliciousness and health are mutually exclusive.
I don't think they have to be, but I don't want to sacrifice deliciousness for the sake of being healthy. I guess that's what my point is.
Well, I can pretty much assure you that Osmond Rodas is not going to let that happen.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, he's, yeah.
What is he not going to allow?
He's not going to allow the he's not going to allow the Mikes of the world, his customer base, to feel that they are being shortchanged in flavor by healthiness. He is not going to allow that. So I don't. Go ahead, Bob.
I was going to say, I came up thinking that in order for a gumbo to be a gumbo, it had to have a roux. If it didn't have a roux, it was a soup, but it wasn't a gumbo. And this gumbo that you were describing that you had at Forks and Corks, I just don't know how he got it that thick with just using.
It was overly thick, actually. It was overly thick and not really appealing looking at all.
Ooh, you should have seen the stuff they were giving us at the Sonesta a couple of weeks ago. That was that annual fundraiser for them. And I was judging it along with a bunch of other people. And we had this problem back and forth and up and down.
Well, those all looked like gumbos, and they were all gumbos, and none of them were.
Or a lack of gumbo. That was another thing.
Even remotely as thick as this.
Yeah.
Not even remotely as thick.
Well, it's always been said that everybody makes their gumbo differently. And, you know, I think that's probably true. It's just a very personalized thing. But I just can't imagine making a gumbo without a roux, I guess is what I'm getting to.
Well, I am curious about the whole. I am curious about the pairing of those two individuals. And I don't know how you felt about Marvin. Did you like Marvin?
I did. Yeah, I did like his food at the original Pardo's. I thought he was pretty good over there.
I thought he was one of the great talents. I loved Marvin's food, and that was a great loss.
To tell you the truth, I think the food at, now I haven't been to Pepe's in a while, but we really enjoyed the food at Pepe's from the day it opened. I mean, I really don't know what needed to be changed over there as far as tweaking the menu, because I thought the food was really good.
There's not very many people in Pepe's anytime you go, so I think that's what needed to be changed. You know,
Probably
needed more people in there. They needed to attract more people. It looks like they're coming along really well with the gastropub on Boston. We were at
Del
Porto the other night. Yes, me too.
Had a good meal at Del Porto?
I'm sorry, what?
Did you have a good meal at Del Porto?
There is no other kind, in my opinion.
It's first class.
Yeah, there is no other kind of meal to be had at Del Porto.
Agreed.
Other than killer, you know.
That makes me think that the gastropub will be nothing but good, you know.
I can't wait. I mean, something else from the likes of Del Porto, sign me up, you know.
So, okay, well, anyway. Here's an update in the stock market tomorrow. Talk to you later. Bye.
Well, let's see.
Bye.
Where are we?
My daughter begged me.
What time is it?
Oh, yeah, we have to take a break. 260-6368 is the number. We'll be right back.
Hi there. Why, it's Tom Fitzmaurice, and here we are with the food show and heading right along. And still with us for the last few minutes.
Gregory.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Gregory, step right up.
Hello.
And come on in.
Can you hear me?
Can hear you perfectly. Come on in.
Hello. No, I don't mind holding. I'm up on top of the Eiffel Tower deglazing my pans right now. So,
huh?
No, it went right over Tom's head.
He's just doing a synopsis of the show, which has been all over the place.
Oh. Actually, I kind of like when the shows go this way. You know what? When I was still in the Navy in '84 when the World's Fair was going on, and I was very fortunate to I had only been in the Navy like a year and a half, maybe 2 years by that time. Anyway, I had the whole month of July because I had worked it out until I got my 30 days leave, and I spent it down there, and I couldn't believe the transformation my city did in the couple of years I was away, right? And if I recall, the first really Uber restaurant in the Warehouse District and was actually inside of a hotel, and it had to be the Grill Room at the Windsor, because that was just terrific, and it had well over a 30-year run. It's probably one of the best bistros in America, if you recall.
Yeah, I would think that that's a good point. That's a very good point.
Totally was ahead of everybody else that subsequently moved into the warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, they had to wait for the fair to end, you know, for all that real estate to become available.
Yeah.
But very, very fond memories of the summer of '84 and just how much that whole area. And I knew it as a kid because my father worked in the CBD, and we'd often have to go that way, you know, through that old part of the Warehouse District, especially around Julia and Camp. Talk about Skid Row.
I'm telling you, it was
rotten.
Unbelievable.
You know, unbelievably rotten.
I don't think I've told anybody to this ever, but it's not all that interesting anyway. But I was
sure
doing
it is, if you say it.
It was the a couple of the organizations that were pulling the whole festival together. They were approaching me to do something about food after they are finished, and they were going to have this permanent kind of.
That was the plan all along, wasn't it? The revitalization
bicycled. I bicycled around the thing for weeks, and until I told them this is going nowhere fast, and it never did. And then it all of a sudden, then it hit, and that's when it really got good.
That's one of those things where you like being proved wrong about something.
Yeah, I guess
so. As far
so.
As the city's concerned.
So, yeah. Gregory, do you remember the Italian restaurant I'm trying to think of that was, if my memory serves me correctly, on Peters Street?
it was really a beautiful little restaurant. It had one name, and briefly they were in the Riverwalk, and then they went to that place. I think they had two locations at the time. Hold on. It's at the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, because it did live on past – the it lived on past the World's Fair, didn't it?
World's Fair, yeah. Uh-huh. And they actually were doing so well, they had a place briefly in the Riverwalk. Now, I wasn't living in New Orleans, but I would always visit. And, you know, the first place I want to go is downtown whenever I'm, you know, in town, especially if I've been away for a while. But I know the name of it. Golly, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Does anyone remember the name of the Italian restaurant in the Italian section of the
World's Fair? It was a pretty classy place, too, especially the one on North Peters. I mean, on South Peters, rather. South Peters.
It was charming, yeah.
Yeah. And, anyway.
And then it lived on past the World's Fair, and then it disappeared.
Yeah, certainly did. Yeah, it was still in the Warehouse District, I know, up until by the time I got out of the Navy, and that would have had to have been the mid to late 90s. So it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh yeah,
it
was right there.
It lasted that long?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't far away from the Windsor Court. It was like cat a corner, a block up. You know? Yeah, it was like on the other side of the Windsor Court. I don't know if you recall.
Okay, wait a minute. Are you talking about where the Pelican Club is now?
No. The Windsor Court in the Warehouse.
You're talking about heading down more into the Warehouse District.
Yeah, into the Warehouse District, going towards the Pontchartrain Expressway. If you were going to get on the bridge to go across the river, yeah. That's where it was, and the name's on tip of my tongue, and usually I'm pretty good at this stuff.
Okay, well, think about it, because I definitely want to know it.
I mean, somebody
we're not going to wait for it.
I was glad what Greg said about using your wines. Yeah, use them a lot and deglaze a lot. I always keep a bottle of cognac, which never goes bad, and I always have a red or white that I'm drinking at that time, and if I don't use it all, you know, I put it in the fridge, even the reds. And then you can get a lot out of it because I love deglazing my pans. Oh, and also, back in 2013, I was at the Jules Verne restaurant at the Tour Eiffel. And that was pretty nice. I was I was a guest, so I wasn't paying the tab.
I was about to say, what was the ticket?
Oh, golly, man. I believe me, it was very expensive, and
Was it good?
I didn't even bother, you know, asking or even looking at the check. But anyway, I was with a couple of associates. This was Frederick Wildman and Sons. It's like everybody that's in the wine business's dream to have an expenses-paid trip to go, you know, to go on a buying trip. Yeah. Oh, man, Frederick Wildman is probably the best importer of fine wines in the United States. They're out of New York City. So this was all their tab. And there was like 16 of us in the whole group. It was me, two other associates, and some other guys I knew from New York. And it was breathtaking. Probably one of the best meals I've ever had besides Louis the 16th. And I can say that. And I've been all over the world. You know, so it was right up there.
Well, I would love to know someone who did pay the bill at Jules Verne and tell me what it was.
Now, of course, I'm very curious to know how much that really was. But I'm sure it was quite expensive.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I would say. All right, thank you, Gregory.
I got today.
Thanks for dropping in.
All right, you guys.
Thanks.
Love you.
It's the food show. I'm Tom Fitzmaurice. What do we talk about here? We do food. What kind of food? All of it. And you can make up your mind as you go along, or you can just be with us. Our telephone number is 260-6368, 260-6368. Call right now. You'll get right in. And whatever is on your mind is good enough for us, unless you start getting stupid, in which case... That wouldn't have happened because that never happens.
No, you wouldn't even notice it here.
No, you really couldn't.
260-6368. So we just have another 15 minutes. This will be about the time that Stephen should call. Although, Stephen should have called at 4:44, but he missed it again.
Oh, I'm waiting for that.
That's Stephen's designated time to call, but he hasn't been holding up his part of the bargain.
So what are we getting this weekend in terms of eating?
It's not even close to the weekend, Tom. So if you're already thinking about what you're eating this weekend, that proves to me that you're still doing your thing.
I
have no idea what we're eating this weekend,
and I have no idea where that's going. But anyhow,
all right. So today we were talking about it being National Oranges and Lemons Day.
Yes.
Nobody mentioned grapefruit.
Ooh, I can't eat grapefruit.
Well, I do, and I think I much prefer it.
I think you should, but it's a medical thing.
Yeah, I much prefer grapefruit to, well, actually not lemon too. I don't know what I'm going to do now because I'm not drinking tea as much as I was, so that means that I'll probably get scurvy. That's the only time I ever eat any kind of citrus anything.
Is this iced tea?
Yeah,
I've kind of cut it down.
No, you're not supposed to drink it at all. If you're flushing, you're not supposed to drink it either.
Iced tea?
Yeah, it's caffeine.
Gee.
Okay, so on this day in 1989, the Food and Drug Administration allowed sushi chefs in New York City to import fugu. Is that how you say it? The puffer fish for the first time.
Yeah, I remember that. Why anybody would even be marginally interested in that, I do not know.
Because there are some people who like, they're thrill seekers, and they like the idea of living on the edge. So if you're eating and you go a little bit over the edge eating fugu or whatever it was called, you could die. Because the pufferfish, whose salient culinary characteristic is that its liver and some other organs are so deadly that eating them can paralyze or kill you. However, the rest of it is alleged to be the best sashimi there is. I've tried it and can tell you this is not true.
Yeah.
The ultimate food... Go ahead, what?
I was going to say that was my reaction to it as well. I took a very small piece of this, and it was a rare time when I'm going out on a limb like that. But the first thing I noticed was this tastes like nothing at all. P.S. I love you. it was nothing.
Uh-huh.
And I never ate it again. And I live to talk about it now.
To rant about it. The ultimate fugu experience is supposed to be eating parts of the fish close to the liver, feeling the anesthesia begin to set in, And then to feel it leave your body.
Yep.
And I feel sorry for someone that needs that experience. That's all I can say.
Oh, well, they don't need to be us, and we don't need to be them. So.
The practices of wrapping lemon halves in yellow gauze to keep the seeds in while you squeeze the lemon over your fish is one of those disappearing niceties of fancy restaurants that really made sense. But ipso facto, it's not a sign of excellence. Well, I'm sure that's true. There were a lot of places that were not very good restaurants that I'm sure had lemons like that. Although I haven't seen in a while. I'm trying to think of right now the last place I saw lemon wrapped in yellow gauze.
I don't know if I've ever seen it. What did that indicate?
Maybe the Windsor Court had it like that for their iced tea. They have a nice tea presentation.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe.
And it has sushi in it?
No.
No,
that can't be right. We've moved on to lemons, Tom.
Okay.
All right, so I'm looking through. You know what? It's I was reading something from your almanac the other day, and I stopped reading it because I saw that Fergie of the Black Eyed Peas was on the list, but it was something about Currier and Ives.
Currier.
And I'd have to go back and look it up, but Currier and Ives. I'm trying to think of the song, the Christmas song.
Oh, I can tell you that. That's one of my favorite songs. But I can't remember the lyrics. Come on, it's roughly right before
sleigh ride together with you.
Somehow the snow is falling and friends are calling you. You know, Johnny Mathis sang that on a commercial.
Well, where was the part that said it's like a calendar from Currier and Ives?
That's right. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the song. I'm a work on it so we can give a little performance of it at the end.
My goodness. We are silly.
Yeah, well, why not be?
Yeah. All right. So today, words to eat by. And every day when I've been good, I get an orange after food. Robert Louis Stevenson said that.
That's good for him.
So, Tom, you don't have to be good. You get oranges all the time anyway.
I do?
Yeah. Has there ever been a day... When did you start your orange thing? Your orange thing is what I call it with...
I'm not sure.
If I could write it, Tom's orange thing with an emoji behind it.
I think it's I was living around City Park at that time.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember.
And that's when you started just
drifting along like the tumbling tumbleweeds.
Yeah, and this was when you started your orange project?
I think so, but I'm not positive. I've been drinking orange juice every day since I was like 12.
Okay, so I said, when did you start with this?
Yeah.
So it was 12.
At the Time Saver.
What made you decide that orange juice every day
I'd go to the Time Saver.
Was an essential part of your day?
I'd open the store at 7 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
I would reach into the walk-in cooler and get a half-size orange juice and drink it at the Time Saver.
I see. Okay, and when did you decide that you needed to start squeezing it yourself?
Squeezing it? Because the stuff that was in the bottle was just
No, but I mean, at what point? Like, how old were you when you made that decision?
12.
You started squeezing your own oranges at 12?
Yeah, something like that. I started everything pretty young. I'm not kidding. You know,
folks, you probably think.
I went to get my first job when I was 13 years old.
Yeah.
And I kept on going until 1972, I think.
You know, Tom.
Yes?
I just want, because people probably listen to this show and they think that I could be nicer to you. But I just want to let everyone know I was such a good little wife when we first got married. You had all of your old man habits that I was going to do like a good little wife. Like I said, I was going
to
iron
all
your
shirts. Whatever
happened
to that? I've just been
wondering. I was going to squeeze your juice. And after a little while of that, I went, boop this. You keep up your stuff all by yourself. I am not going to do this. But I did squeeze your juice for a little while anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it was a nice nice thing to
have. I thought it was a silly habit. And
yeah, well.
When it ended, I was really, really glad about that. But that wasn't until after I purchased for you that $100 juice squeezer. The one with the that you have to kind of hurt yourself from. It's the one that you see in restaurants.
Yeah.
And it's like just one swift push of the arm and the juice is extracted. Yours was much more nuanced. It went on a little rotating thing.
Hmm.
All right, let's go back to the phones.
Ann is waiting for us. Ann, welcome to the food show.
Hi, I know how you are addicted to Mr. Peeps. They now have them in root beer flavor. They have them in...
Wait, Mr.
Root,
who?
Root. Wait, the peeps that you like.
I missed the first part of this. Say it over again.
I said, I know how you are addicted to Mr. Peeps.
Mr. Peeps.
Oh, Peeps. Like Peeps.
Oh, Peeps.
Just regular Peeps. Okay.
Yeah.
Is it called Mr. Peeps? I've never noticed that there was a mistress in front of it.
No, that's why I was doing it to be facetious to Tom.
Okay. Well, I'm having next gracious off today.
They do have them in root beer flavor.
Yeah.
They have them in cotton candy flavor.
The one I like is the garlic sardine. That's the one that really has.
I know.
Taste.
Yeah.
What other flavors are there, Ann?
Huh?
They're root beer, cotton candy, and
you have
something else. I can't remember the other one. I saw them at CVS the other day.
Yeah.
You know what? Peeps is another one of those really interesting companies. I was talking about Gold Bond and how they brought it back from oblivion by blanketing the airwaves with these nickel spots on radio. And now look at it. This was when Tom and I got married. We knew the person who brought that back. Peeps is another company that was on its way to obscurity. And somebody got in there and decided to get with the times. And look at it now. They've got so many different flavors. They come out with something for just about every mini holiday. They probably have something for St. Patrick's Day.
It probably will before long.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who eats Peeps besides Tom, but apparently a lot of people are because they are really selling them. They really are.
Oh, I like them.
You do? Okay.
There is a character of these things that makes me wonder what is causing it. And here it is. It's you get one that's it's yellow. Yellow is the classic.
That is the classic, right.
And then I eat one of them. And then I seal it back up again. And the next morning, I eat one other one. And there is a dramatic difference in flavor and in texture. And I've always wondered why that would be. And
the sugar, don't you think?
Well, yeah, but there are a lot of things that are sugar that don't do that. And if you just take it out and just put it aside, it'll change again. And I don't quite get it, but it's amusing enough to keep me going and instead of worrying about
it. And it doesn't really matter because you're going to eat it regardless of how much it's changed anyway.
Yeah, sure, why
anyway.
Not?
Yeah. Right. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks
I know how he
back.
Likes them.
Yes. Good to know. Thanks.
Yep. Okay,
this is
bye.
The food show, and we have more of the food show coming.
We've come to the end of the food show.
We've come to the end
we
of the food show?
We've come to the end of the food show, believe it or not. It is 5 o'clock.
I'll be darned.
Yeah.
That must have been one hell of a good show.
Really, thank you, folks. Have a great meal tonight. Have a good evening. We'll be back here tomorrow. WWL.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.